Schwab Advisor Services is proud to support the RIA Edge podcast and equally proud to support independent financial advisors like you. In a challenging year, how did 68% of firms surveyed in Schwab's RIA benchmarking study meet or exceed their new client goals? By following key success factors, such as leveraging new technology, adapting strategies to win new business and stay connected with their clients, while also attracting and developing the right talent. The Schwab RIA benchmarking study is just one of many ways they provide you with the insights and resources needed to succeed and grow. Get the full picture at advisorservices.schwab.com. Hey, everyone. Welcome to the RIA Edge podcast. My name is David Armstrong. I'm the editorial director at wealthmanagement.com. This, as you know, is the podcast where we speak to principals and owners, founders of registered investment advisory firms that we think are growing by what we say, design, not by default. These are firms that we feel are professionally managed, building organizations that are structured for sustainable growth. And I can't think of anyone better to talk about the issue of growth in the RIA space with than my guest today, Brent Bodesky, the CEO and founder of Savant Wealth Management. Brent, thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Excited to chat today.
You know, we talk about advisor growth a lot, and I am going to let you introduce your firm in just one second, but I want to start out with this first question, because we hear this a lot from advisors who say, why focus on growth so much? Why growth? Why can't I just be happy being an advisor who you know, stays in my lane and does my work and doesn't worry about growth and just to kind of gonna ride out the business taking care of my clients? Why is growth such an important topic for advisors, all advisors, to pay attention to?
Yeah, I think there's a myth. A lot of the firms in our space, you know, they got this view that I don't need to grow. I just got to take good care of my clients. And in the short run, that works, right? I mean, you could just say, wow, I'm going to really do a good job with this client, that client, that client. Here's the problem. It's naive in the long run, because if you're not growing, you're dying at the vine. If you're not growing, you can't attract the very best next generation talent. You can't afford to, you know, invest in innovation. You can't invest in great technology to create a better client experience. And none of that shows up today. It's sort of like erosion. You don't notice erosion day to day or even month to month, maybe even year to year. But over time, you know, if you're not innovating, if you're not growing, you know, if you're not improving, you know, your value proposition, then, you know, you ultimately, it is like erosion. You wake up 10 years later and, you know, you don't have a lot, right? And, you know, unfortunately, clients tend to be, well, fortunately, clients tend to be sticky. Unfortunately, you know, many advisors may be underserving their clients and they don't know any better. But I think in the long run, you know, your business is going to be more valuable. And frankly, we owe to our clients to be excellent. And that requires excellence, requires growth. You can just focus on growth without excellence. And you can, in the short term, you can just focus on excellence without growth. But in the long run, it's sort of a Venn diagram where you really need to find the intersection of growth and excellence to create a sustainable, durable business where we treat our clients as they deserve to be treated, and we create opportunities for that next gen talent in our respective firms.
Absolutely. Well said. Thank you for that. So first of all, before we kick off, and I doubt there's many folks listening to this podcast who don't know Savant, but for those who don't, do you want to just give us the metrics of your firm, where you sit now? And you're founded in 1986, so you've been at this game a long time. Tell us where you are now, assets, clients, offices.
Yeah. So we've been, you know, growing aggressively. I was just doing the math the other day. In the last 7.5 years, we grew over 11 times. So we're about $27 billion of assets under management, between 16 and 17,000 clients, plus a lot of, we have a decent 401k business, so a lot of participants on that front. In addition, we also have a substantive accounting firm, about 15 to 16 million of tax and accounting revenue, and close to 100 professionals on that side of the business. About 550 employees in aggregate. We have 40 locations, 15 states. Also have a focused and a dedicated state planning firm and law firm, trust company. So really, think of it as we're building sort of a one-stop shop, platform that I used to say, it was super regional, and then it was multi-super regional. And I'm not going to call it a national firm yet, but we are continuing to expand our reach.
Well, you're getting very close, right? And I think you've been one of, I think this is fair to say, one of the most aggressive players in the M&A space in RIAs over the past couple of years. I think last year, 8 or 9 deals last year in 2023 alone. And
Yeah, we did 9 RIAs, and we also acquired 2 accounting firms last year. So 11 firms in total.
yeah, that's incredible. And most amazing to me, 3 of those firms, by my math here, were over $2 billion in AUM,
Yeah,
acquiring
we had
two
a
billion.
3.3 billion, about a 2.3 billion, and one that was a little shy of 2 billion, and then a lot of others, below a billion, over 100 million and below a billion. But yeah, we're not trying to buy everything. Last year was our largest volume, but we're just super highly curated. There's some of our competitors that'll buy anything that breathes, and will just buy as much as they can, and playing the whole financial engineering game. We're really about finding partners. We find growing through acquisitions, there's really 4 main benefits. One, one fell swoop, you get a pile of really quality talent. So we're super focused on who are the people, and are they aligned with us? They share a vision. Do they bring excitement, long runway? And then the second is that moves us into new locations. Like we had a big push into the Southeast this last year, and obviously the people are heading Southeast. So we were able to hang a number of put up a number of flags, Florida and Alabama and Georgia, South Carolina. And the third is when we're in a market, being able to do acquisitions allows us to double down and create density. We find that once you're in a market, if you're bigger in a market, you get more at bats. And then, of course, new plays in the playbook. What I love is every time we do a deal, we have a good playbook, it wins, but we don't have every play figured out. And sometimes a new partner will come in and have a better play than we do. So we're happy to rip out our page and stick theirs in. So yeah, so it's been the whole M&A, we could have probably done twice as many deals, but it's just really being focused on finding the right people, who are excited, that we're excited about being partners with, that want to be in this for the long run.
Sure. And tell me a little bit about how that M&A for you has changed over the years. I think for the first, I don't know, half, one third of your life as Savant, I mean, it was organic growth, right? I mean, you didn't get into the M&A game until a little bit later in the firm's history. How has it changed between then, when you made your first acquisition, say, and now? Is it a Obviously, the scale is a little bit different, although, like you say, you still do acquire smaller firms as well as the opportunities arise. But is there something else that you're looking for now? Is it more important to bring in different services or look for acquisitions that bring in a component that you're missing now in the service offering? Or is it just a hunt for good talent and a growth for regional flagpoles?
Yeah, I think it's both. I mean, the first two-thirds of the firm's life was purely organic growth. We did our first acquisition about 11 years ago, and it about killed us, right? I mean, it was everything we could have done wrong, we did wrong on that deal. It worked out fine, but it was painful, and it was hard, and we learned a lot of lessons of what not to do. And then we've done 28 more since then. And the good news is all 28 of those have gone really well. All those partners still like us. It's really been, a good complement to organic growth. I mean, at the end of the day, the best way to grow is organically, a client at a time. And the challenge our industry has is it used to be you just hung a shingle and people called you. Nowadays, there's a lot more competition. Nowadays, you have to take oftentimes a client from another RIA or independent, as often as not, and even the wirehouses are increasingly looking like RIAs. So yeah, it has changed. In the early days, we would do, I used to say 0 to 2 deals a year, because if we did more than two, it would break us, and we didn't feel like we had to do any, right, in a given year. You fast forward last year, as I said, we did 11. The year before that, we did 5. The year before that, we did 3. And so we have accelerated, but it's been deliberate. We have a 20-person, dedicated M&A team. And some of those are focused on, the business development and sales part. And another group of those are focused on diligence, another focused on integration, and then another focused on optimization. And, what we're really looking for is firms that are excited about growing, about being excellent. If somebody wants to get a check and go to the beach, they should go somewhere else, right? But if somebody is interested in being part of something bigger, better, cooler, that are excited about having a more robust toolkit to better serve clients, who are excited about getting a shot of adrenaline, in terms of being able to get lead generation and when you're part of a bigger brand and you got better support, it's a lot easier to grow, which is the whole theme of your podcast here. Mm-hmm. What's changed? So getting back to your question of what's changed, it used to be people would like, hey, I'm going to merge with you and that's my succession plan, and then I can retire in a few years. Now, when you look at almost all the deals we did last year, none of them are looking to exit stage left. They're all excited about being part of something substantive. And it's funny, these, billion plus firms, used to be a billion was a lot. And so everybody aspired and you knew you made it. Well, now it's hard to be a billion or even a $5 billion firm because you're competing with 20 and 25 billion firms that have really robust offerings and bigger brands and better technology and, easier to attract, the best talent. So we're finding, the people that are joining us, they're excited about being part of something bigger, better, cooler, and realize that how hard it would be, if not impossible, for them to build the accounting capabilities and the wealth transfer capabilities and the trust capabilities and the specialists that we retain. Smaller firms tend to be, you have a lot of generalists. As you get bigger, you're able to have specialists, and those specialists can, go deeper, and provide, more comprehensive, advice to clients. So it's kind of a strategic advantage. So the people that are joining us, they're not retiring. I think of Capital Directions down in Atlanta, and they had multiple owners, and the oldest was 52, and he's like, all in, right? And mm-hmm. I'm good for 15 years, but it was really about being part of something bigger, being able to offer more to their clients. That's why they found us. Now there's a whole lot of other firms that are just looking to, monetize and get out of Dodge, and they should go to our competitors, right? But those that are excited about, creating something really cool that they're proud of, that can serve many more clients better, that's who we're looking for. Those are the kind of partners we search.
I was going to ask if you have noticed a change in the sellers, because you're right. I mean, it used to be, here's my succession plan. I'm going to sell the firm and walk away. It sounds like those firms are still out there. There are people still looking for that check to just sort of ride out their last couple of years. Have you noticed, though, a different kind of seller who maybe, like you say, is understanding the pieces of the service model that they don't have and the operations that they don't have and looking for to sell to a larger firm that would fill in those holes? Is that an increasingly larger pool?
When I look at our successes just in the last year, as I indicated, none of them are looking to leave. They're rolling. It's a little bit unique about Savant because we're employee owned and controlled. We have outside capital that are minority investors, but they can't ever make us sell the company. They can't ever make us buy them out. If we want to turn right and they think we should turn left, we turn right and they smile about it. So that's been attractive to firms that are, not looking to be put on the PE treadmill and, sold every 2 or 3 or 4 years, but rather 2/3 of our ownership are employees. So when firms join us, we've had, as much as 85% equity role. I've had as little as 15, but in that case, it was a firm that was 80% owned by a family office, but 15 of the 20% owned by employees rolled. So we're really, as I said, it's I don't even like the term M&A because that's like big fish swallowing little fish. I much prefer the term partnering, because it's you know, we are a partnership, and it's finding people that are aligned with us, who share a common vision, and who are excited to grow faster and deliver more value for the 1%, you know, they charge to clients. So it's you know, I think what's unique is the people coming to us, they're owning a significant piece of the pie. And you know, they, you know, we were accounting today last year, named as the number one largest combined wealth manager, you know, accounting firm. And so, you know, it's like, that's really hard business, right? And so the people that have joined us, they were excited about being able to offer, you know, tax capabilities and deep tax planning. We've got a whole dedicated team of seven attorneys that do deep wealth transfer, that will draft documents for clients if they desire. And they, you know, the firms that joined us like that. You know, we invested, you know, north of $5 million in an Australian fintech that's really focused on digitizing. It's called Lumient, but they're it's all about digitizing and scaling the vision, values, goals, well-being, longevity, you know, these soft matters. Like, when I started in the business, I used to think everybody cared about rates of return and standard deviations. And I've come to realize they don't care about that. The investments are just, that's just like the fuel in the tank. And what, and, you know, you need a car, you know, which is the strategies, but ultimately you need a destination. That's your ideal future. So like this Lumion technology that we've invested millions in now, it's all about having those deep conversations with the non-CFO spouse around what matters to people and what they're excited about. And so those are the capabilities, you know, whether it's a trust or tax or wealth transfer or legal or insurance, Fidelity insurance, you know, the tech that the people are looking to, you know, like they join us and they can just like that get an upgrade. Right. Mm-hmm. And but the flip side, we've also, you know, been focusing increasingly on niche markets. A good example was a firm a couple of years ago we acquired, you know, that focuses on tenured university professors in Big Ten Ivy League schools. That's all they do. Right. And, you know, it's having really deep expertise and that and the nuances of that tenured university professor. So that's another example where, you know, yeah, we're bringing new, better technology and capabilities to them, but they're bringing deep expertise in university. Another firm we acquired has deep expertise in C-level Fortune 500 executives, helping them navigate through their options and, you know, equity and, you know, the benefits. So another example where, like, you know, it was a smaller firm and this is all they did, but, you know, we've got a lot of executives. So bringing that in-house, you know, A, they get a better toolkit, but we're getting new plays in our playbook that sort of are able to benefit all of our advisors and, you know, all of our executive clients.
Yeah, that's great. When you bring in a partner firm, is there a lot of restructuring of that business that you need to do? I mean, I imagine that there would be, you know, right, a branding exercise for one, right? Everyone kind of comes under the Savant brand. And I imagine that the centralized technology and maybe investment options are centralized. You know, how much do you have to go in and kind of retool the firm when you bring it in?
Yeah, so we do fully integrate. You know, it takes some time. You know, it can take some cases 6 months, other cases it's, you know, it can be more than a year. You know, but yeah, ultimately we want to be one firm, you know, one vision, one culture, one playbook. You know, we call it the Savant way. But, you know, again, I think we're humble enough and early enough innings that we realize, you know, we don't have all the plays. And in some cases, the partners that join us have great ideas and we want to embrace those. So it's not like, you know, take your square peg and stick it in a round hole, take it or leave it, you know. But I mean, the reality is, you know, if we're acquiring a firm with, you know, 20 or 30 or 50 people, you know, we're 550 people. You know, we've got the benefit of scale and you know, many times more evolved processes. On the other hand, like, again, you know, every new partner brings great concepts that we capture and are able to then leverage firm wide. So it's an iterative process. It doesn't happen overnight. We all want to end up on the same playbook, but of course we don't want to be disruptive to clients. We don't want to lose the opportunity to mine the best ideas. You know, at the end of the day, I like to say it's like the best ideas win. I don't care if it's an intern or a new partner or me, the CEO, like best ideas always have to win. And so a lot of that is creating culture and environment where it's safe to surface ideas, even if they're silly. And then having, you know, a process to really, you know, identify the best plays and continually make that playbook better.
We invite you to join us on May 13th through 16th in Hollywood, Florida, for RA Edge, part of the Wealth Management Edge event, with an agenda designed to help accelerate the growth of your RIA firm with the latest C-suite strategies. You'll walk away with frameworks and approaches for M&A, organic growth, and talent development. Use promo code PODCAST20 to save 20% on your registration. Visit wealthmanagementedge-event.com for more information.
It strikes me that Savant is one of the earlier firms that, to your point about keeping an entrepreneurial culture, but at the same time, recognized early on the need to kind of divide up the roles of a professionally managed business, right? There are business managers who manage the business, right? Advisors who do the advising, M&A team does the M&A, and I'm sure there's dozens more that I'm missing. But I think you guys saw that early on, right? The need for, maybe you can speak to a little bit about how your management structure has changed.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I look back and at the beginning of my career, I was the bat boy, and then I became the batter, and then I was the player coach, and then I was the coach, and then I was the general manager, and then you just kind of keep evolving, you know, go from doing work to managing work to leading work, leading leaders of people that manage work, that do work, you know, to being that visionary, and so it's an evolutionary process. I think I like to tell new prospective partners, the biggest difference between being a, you know, 10 or 20 or 50 person firm and we're 550, you know, and likely soon to be over 1,000. The biggest difference is specialization. When you're small, you wear 40 hats. You wear all the hats, and some of those look good on you, and you're proud of wearing them, and others don't look so good on you, but somebody's got to wear them. You know, as you move, become part of something bigger, you know, instead of wearing 40 hats, it's the opportunity to say, all right, what hats do I really enjoy wearing and look best on me, right? What are the 5 or 7 things that I can do instead of 40? And most people prefer that. You know, most people, you know, prefer to be specialists, and you can be more effective. You can be more efficient. You can make more money when you're more specialized. Now, there are those like people that like being a one-man band, and they should stay on their own, which is fine. Nothing wrong with that. But yeah, so it's about specialization. And I will also say, yes, we centralize a lot of functions, compliance, we functionize, you know, centralize finance, we centralize investments and trading, we centralize the tax, but the people are wherever they are at. You know, we've got people in 40 offices. So, you know, our investment committee and investment team, I know Rockford is our world headquarters, if you will, Rockford, Illinois. But I think there's only one person, you know, from Rockford on the investment, you know, committee. So it's the idea is to say, listen, we want to have a best way of doing things and being able to do that across, you know, teams, offices, clients. But that doesn't mean, you know, everybody is, you know, in Rockford, Illinois. Like, they're not. We have 550 right. people. You know, maybe 20% of the people are, you know, in the Rockford vicinity. So it's the nice thing is it used to be, you know, when we were, you know, Rockford centric or, you know, in the Midwest, you know, it's like, all right, you're relegated to whatever talent you can, you know, get there. And in some cases, you had to settle for B players or even C players. The cool thing is now, you know, becoming, you know, more of a national firm, you know, we can draw talent from a lot of different markets. And we just hired a new CFO, and he's a total rock star. He was, he ran for William Blair, which is a 3,100 person firm. You know, he ran technology, you know, finance, HR, facilities, and philanthropy, you know, for the last 12 years. I could have never, you know, when I was smaller and in Rockford, I could have never attracted him or afforded him. But as a bigger firm, you know, that, you know, is able, you know, he's able to remain in Chicago. You know, we got a big presence in Chicago as an example. So that's the kind of cool thing is as you get larger, ability to attract better talent, being able to afford better talent, you know, and just focus on A players, right? You know, I used to have to beg the C players to work for me, and now the A players are lined up and, you know, excited to be part of something really cool that we're building.
Yeah, that's great. We hear a lot about the war for talent out there from advisors, and you know, I don't think just advisors necessarily, but you know, support staff or anyone in kind of the back office who understands the business. Is that something you have encountered on the ground at your various offices? If they're, you know, and how do those offices look? I mean, what is the support staff to advisor ratio, or how do you structure, you know, back office to client facing? Are there any kind of metrics or thoughts you can share about how you ideally, I'm sure that varies across the board, but how, you know, the ideal structure for an office in Savant?
Yeah, so we, you know, we're about 150 advisors. Now, if you include the kids right out of school, we call them associate advisors. We're closer to 200, and that's out of 550 people. So if you really say the client facing advisors, about 150 out of 550. So we have a lot of, you know, leverage, you know, really allowing advisors to advise. I mean, in some cases, advisors like to do a lot of things, but for the most part, they like taking care of clients, getting more clients, conveying wisdom. You know, if they got gray hair, you know, or no hair, they're mentoring. And if they, you know, have a full head of hair that's not gray, they're usually being mentored. Like, it's like those things, right? And then there's stuff, of course, you got to do compliance and CPE and all that. But it's really like four or five things. And you know, that works really well, and it's easier to attract advisory talent because, like I said, most advisors, they don't like the compliance stuff. They don't like the administrative things. They don't want to deal with negotiating leases and dealing with technology. So we've got a whole team of people that handle all that for them, real, you know, professional managers. And so that allows them to, advisors to, you know, advise more clients and have more time, face time with clients, prospects, and then make more money as a result. And so it's, you know, the advisory teams are really arranged where you have, typically there's advisor threes. Those tend to be, you know, the lead advisors on the biggest clients. Then you got advisor twos. They'll take lead advisor. They'll be a lead advisor in some cases, but then they're going to be a co-advisor supporting the lead advisor. And then you have advisor ones, you know, they're more, let's just say that, you know, 3 to 7 year CFP, you know, and so they're carrying a lot of water for the advisor twos and threes. And then you got the associates, they're just out of school and usually don't have their CFP yet and, you know, working on that, but they're pretty much in the meetings, taking notes, coordinating backstage. So it's really, you know, the goal is to get, you know, the right, you know, our advisors focusing on making new friends, getting new clients and, you know, conveying wisdom, you know, that's what they do. And so I think it's actually been a lot easier for us to recruit and retain advisors because, you know, if you just love advising, you want to do more of that. And we've got, you know, deep support of advisors and a lot of specialists. I mean, we've got a whole, you know, large dedicated investment trading team. So our advisors don't have to trade. We've got 16 people just dedicated to marketing, you know, which drives leads. So, you know, advisors love closing business. And so we tee up the opportunities for them. You know, everyone has clients, so they don't have to do that. We got a whole team that does that. And I can go on and on and on, but it's really allowing people to specialize and do the part they love, which in the case of our advisors, it's get clients, make new friends and convey wisdom, you know, provide wise counsel to our clients.
Yeah. And to that point, if there was a firm out there and the advisor said, you know, our value prop for our clients is we have the best options overlay strategy and the best investment chops of anyone around, would that be a fit for Savant, or that's not really the kind of advisor you're looking for?
Yeah, I would say not. I mean, we're financial planners at heart. And I would say what we really, listen, I think most people do investments poorly, so I don't want to minimize the quality of our investment advice because I think it's amazingly high quality. We've got 25 people that's all they focus on, and so we do a great job there. But the reality is alpha in the form of stock picking or the form of market timing or, you know, tactical or, you know, it's just really hard, right? It doesn't work, let's be honest. The flip side is tax alpha is amazingly powerful and predictable and measurable. And so We have really leaned into tax alpha. Like, taxes are at the center of our process. I mean, they're you know, and you don't want to let the tax tail wag the dog. On the other hand, the only thing that's guaranteed is if you spend less money, you'll make more, and the biggest cost is taxes. And so, and it's not even taxes this year, it's over the rest of your life, and in some cases over multiple generations. So we've, as I indicated, you know, we've got the, we're, you know, at least Accounting Today says we're the largest combined, you know, accounting firm and wealth management firm. That's by design. I mean, accounting business is hard. It's lower margin. You know, there's a big shortage of talent there. So we're not in that business because we necessarily like to be in that business, but it's so critical to be able to provide that deep tax planning to our clients. And then the same thing on the wealth transfer. It's like, how do we avoid estate tax? And, you know, help people optimize, you know, wealth transfer, you know, aligned with their values. Same on the, in the case of the trust company, it's like, how do we manage taxes on a multi-generational basis? So it's an area where when you look at our specialists, because in addition to our advisors, I mentioned we have about 150 advisors, 200 if you include the associates, but we've also got a whole slew of CPAs and attorneys and trust officers and, you know, insurance experts. And so they all also, the specialists don't have, they're not assigned clients, right? They're just there to provide a deep bench and capabilities to supplement that lead advisor to be able to provide more specialized advice, particularly for the larger clients and more complex. But
I
yeah, I
think a
mean,
lot of. Go ahead.
you
I'm
know,
sorry.
some cases options matter, right? You know, doing optional overlay strategies can frankly be a great way to diversify. So, you know, we have those capabilities. It's just, you know, at the end of the day, you got to lead with something. And I view it as we lead with what do you want to be when you grow up, right? What's your ideal future? What's important to you? What are your vision, values, goals? Okay, once, because client, what I've learned is like clients only live one time. We all live once. And by the time you school hard knocks, you got it all figured out, and you get all the experience and wisdom, it's too late. So our job is to really, you know, take the experience we've gained from working with tens of thousands of people and help people make get clearer about what they want to accomplish on the front end, and then make better decisions to increase your odds of getting there. And
Yeah.
so, you know, that's really where the planning comes in. And then the investments are important. I mean, if the planning is the strategies and that's the car that you drive to your ideal future, the investments is the gas or the electricity you put in the car to make it go. So I don't want to minimize the importance of the investments, but it's really first and foremost about what's the ideal future that we're trying to help people solve for, and then, you know, putting the right tax, the right investment, the right planning, the right insurance, and so on, strategies together, and none of that guarantees success, but it increases the odds of success.
Yeah, that makes total sense. I've always been struck by every advisor conference. There's always panels on how to squeeze a few more basis points out of a portfolio using some, you know, factor strategy, but very little on the, you know, the kind of the tax alpha or legacy planning and that kind of
Right.
thing. It's always interesting to me. Tell me a little bit. I know we're kind of coming up at the end of our time here, but I did want to get a couple more questions in, if you don't mind. And a lot of advisors who are in the M&A game, not to the scale of yours, but who are starting out, I think struggle a little bit with compensation and what that looks like. Can you talk a little bit about how you guys structure compensation? I know everyone's given a piece of the company, you're employee owned. I don't know about everybody, but principals largely. Talk to me about how compensation works there and how it's maybe evolved over time.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, as you indicated, it starts at the biggest opportunity is ownership. And we have about 170 employee owners right now. And we go pretty deep in the organization. I mean, some firms, it's just advisors. Well, you know, if you're a long-term, very dedicated client service rep, I mean, you could be an owner at Savant, as an example. So we go deeper on that front. And the nice thing about the equity, you know, your paycheck you pay, you spend, right? You consume. Equity creates and grows, and it creates generational wealth. And for many, you know, my latest, like, what's, you know, I just added a new rest of career goal, and it's like I want to create 2,500 employee millionaires. We don't even have 2,500 yet, but that's like, to me, like, that would be cool. Like, if we could really materially improve the life of, you know, and create, in some cases, generational wealth for our team. Now, getting back to, okay, what's your paycheck look like year to year? Well, you know, for advisors, you know, there's a handful, a number of components. There's a base salary. There's a component tied to servicing revenue, so it's a percentage paid of what the revenue is. There's a component tied to new business development. So if you bring in a new client or you get wallet share from an existing client, there's a one-time payment to incent people to go hunt. There's a team Savant bonus, and this is tied to our growth. It's a piece that if we grow, then it gets paid. If we don't grow, it doesn't get paid. And if we hit it out of the park, then it could be 150% of target. So those are kind of some of the components. And then obviously, there's other elements for different non-advisor roles. But at the end of the day, listen, I mean, we look at all the benchmarking, and our advisors are very well paid. They're paid in a line, similar percentage of revenue as others. The difference, though, is that our advisors tend to make a decent amount more because of the leverage they get to be able to serve more clients, more revenue. A lot of times you hear people talk about, oh, I'm an LPL and I get a 90X% payout. Well, big deal if you got $50 million under management, right? I mean, our typical advisors may have, we've got some advisors that are $5 and $6 million of revenue, that they're lead advisor on. And, it's not uncommon to be, it's pretty typical that you got $1.5 million. Or even 2 million. So if we're starting out with more revenue per advisor because they've got great support and they don't have to deal with all the stuff because we got other people dealing with stuff, then you can make more money, as a result.
Yeah. Excellent. We're coming up to the end of the time. I got a million more questions, but I'm going to end with this one. The investment in Lumient, will that be the only technology investment we see Savant make?
Yeah, in fact, we just hired an expert in AI and our chief data scientist. So we're really leaning into technology. The challenge is you got all there's if you go back in time, there was no fintech. Now there's a lot of fintech, but that fintech doesn't talk together. It doesn't play nice with each other. Yes, there's you got Salesforce, you got Tamarac or Orion, you got MoneyGuide Pro or eMoney, or you get all this stuff, but like all of these software providers want to be the center of your world, and they're usually good at one thing and not so good at other things. And because they want to be the center of your world, they don't really play nice with each other. So where we're really leaning in right now is saying, okay, we're giving up, throwing in the flag around getting all these fintechs to play nice to each other and integrate with each other to create a seamless advisor and client experience. So we're really, in addition to Lumient, which is that creates that client experience and the behavioral conversations, digitizing that, we're building out a whole data layer within our firm that frankly integrates all of the technology and then normalizes all that data. And then from there, we can build on top of that a custom client portal. Instead of the advisor having to have, eight different pieces of technology open on their desktop, being able to bring that all into a single dashboard, if you will. So I'm super excited about where we're going with it. I mean, I think nobody's really figured this out in the industry. Even the biggest players have not figured it out. So we think there's an opportunity to really become a platform company. I mean, when I say platform company, think Apple. Apple has iOS, they have Mac, they have Apple TV, and now they got this vision, vision. But they really are, is then they bring together all these different capabilities into a platform. And some, you think of Apple, they make movies, but then they license movies, and then they let Netflix come on their platform and distribute movies for charging them tolls. So that, but what's that effect is, users of the iPhone or iPad, it's a great, simple turnkey user experience, that is curated and, brought to us. Same thing with Amazon, right? They make it really easy on us, or Uber to get a taxi. These are all, we think of them as big tech, but they're really platform companies. And nobody's done this in the wealth management space. So I think the next big thing, we've been doing this one-stop shop finance for a while now, and others are trying to catch up. But I think the next big thing is becoming a platform company where you create an easy button, client and advisor experience that sort of brings it all together, just like the iPhone brings all these used to eat millions of dollars of devices that would fill up warehouses, and now you can carry it around in your pocket. So we're a ways off from that, obviously, but I think there's a bunch of plays in the from the platform companies playbooks that I'm excited to leverage and really create a differentiated experience for our advisors and clients and new partners.
Yeah, well, that's exciting stuff, and so we'll keep an eye out for more news on that front coming from you all, because I think you're right. No one has really figured it out, and still kind of trying to stitch together a bunch of platforms that each, like you say, want to be the center of your world. It just doesn't work for most advisors. Brent, this has been great. I really appreciate it. I know I've kept you too long. Thanks a lot for your time, and I appreciate your words, and I think folks out there will learn a lot from it.
Good. Well, I appreciate the opportunity and enjoyed the chats today.
And this has been the RIA Edge podcast. Thank you for listening.
Schwab Advisor Services is proud to support the RIA Edge podcast and equally proud to support independent financial advisors like you. In a challenging year, how did 68% of firms surveyed in Schwab's RIA benchmarking study meet or exceed their new client goals? By following key success factors, such as leveraging new technology, adapting strategies to win new business and stay connected with their clients, while also attracting and developing the right talent. The Schwab RIA benchmarking study is just one of many ways they provide you with the insights and resources needed to succeed and grow. Get the full picture at advisorservices.schwab.com.